Welcome to the Hemp Entrepreneur Podcast. We tell the stories of the pioneers and innovators building businesses in hemp across the U.S.
What we want to do is want to prove them wrong by bringing the hemp fabric and the hemp suit in every office around the world.
Imagine buying a three-piece suit made out of hemp. It's durable, breathable, and custom-made. We sit down with Yonetz Rus about his company D. Ionescu. They are handcrafting what could be the world's most organic suit. So on this episode, you'll learn a lot about textiles and how Romania is doing things much differently than China, and how old Soviet technology is a key to their process. I'm Drew Oberholzer.
And I'm co-host Cameron McIntosh, and this is the Hemp Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome to the Hemp Entrepreneur Podcast. Can you first introduce yourself?
Most certainly. My name is Yonetz Rus. I am with you right now from the mythical land of Transylvania. And I'm a vagabond and a hamster.
Great. And tell me a little bit about how you're involved in the hemp industry, what your business is, and how you got started.
All right. We have a long history here in my country processing the hemp fiber. And thus, I am in the sector of hemp clothing. We create our own fabric. And we also, furthermore, create men's clothing, especially suits. That is to say, waistcoats, trousers, and jackets, suit jackets.
And can you describe, you know, I guess, sort of the supply chain, where things are sourced and how you just sort of make all this happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, we are very privileged here, Drew, I would say, because we benefit from let's say old technology but still running from the time of communism. So before 1989 here in Romania, we had this beautiful machinery going on of machines of Soviet origin, and we are able basically to process the fiber through a technological flux that requires no chemicals. So basically what we are doing is that we process the fabric in a way that we don't need to cottonize it, as it is done, for instance, in China. Most of the hemp in the world comes from there, or in India. Most of the countries, basically, when they process the hemp plant, they cottonize it. We don't do that, because we have this beautiful technology that allows us to process it in a machine intensive way.
Wow, interesting. So for our listeners that don't know, what is cottonization? What is that process?
In plain English, I would say that you break the fiber so small, so after the retting stage, let me start like this. So in the old days, just to paint a clear picture, in the old days, the peasants all around the world, they used to cultivate hemp, they used to harvest it, and then they used to do the retting stage, ideally in running water. Cold running water would be best. They used to find a river or whatever source of water, and they used to put the plant in there. They used to leave it roughly between 7 to 12, maximum 2 weeks, days. 7 days to 2 weeks. So 1-2 weeks usually it's enough. After that, they used to get it out. The plant, all the greenery things of the plant would disappear and would remain just the stalk, you would call it, the fiber. And that then is the breaking stage. It's then most of the people in the old days, they used to have a machinery to break that fiber into small pieces. So you were able to spin it and weave it afterwards, and then create whatever, God knows. Now, basically, this is what we are doing right now. But to answer your question, Drew, cotonization means that you break the fiber in so many small pieces that it would fit into your cotton spinning machinery. Because as the listeners, I am sure that they know, hemp plant is really big. It's like 2.5 meters tall sometimes. And the fiber is strong, right? Cotton, on the other hand, it looks more like a puff. We used to see it in the old American movies, right? When these people that play so beautifully the electric guitar and the blues, they used to collect it. And it looks like a puff. So there are different technologies in terms of processing it. If you put the hemp plant, the fiber, into a cotton machinery, most certainly it would break the machinery. On the other side, if you put the cotton, which is like a puff, in a hemp machinery, it would destroy again the machinery. But Chinese, they were very ingenious in a way, and they were able to find through certain chemicals how to break the hemp fiber in so many pieces and in such a way that it would run through a cotton technology oriented spinning and weaving process. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but I would say that it's in very plain language.
Yeah, wow, very interesting. And your process uses zero chemicals. It's really sort of a mechanical process.
Yes, in a way it's tragically comical, like in Shakespeare, because it's so old and it was not updated. Like, if you want, I can tell you a little bit about the history.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Of how we have this technology and why we need to update it.
So Yonitz is very passionate about hemp history, and it's very interesting, so stay with us. It's a little long, but definitely worth it.
I don't want to bore anyone to death with history lessons, but basically after the World War II ended, at the end of 1945, due to our geographical location, I mean Romania, due to its geographical location, we ended up under a communist government because the Soviets, back then they were the liberating army. They saved us from the Nazis. They were the good guys back in the day, you know? And then they were in power back then. Our king, Michael, was forced to abdicate in 47. And they proclaimed the People's Republic, right? And then the first thing that they did, the communists, I'm talking about them because if you want to hear about hemp in Romania or hemp in Eastern Europe, this is strongly interlinked, interweaved with the history of the Communist Party. It's a fact, and we need to study it together. Right. So when the communists first came in the power, they started the process of collectivization, which we call it, which consists in the confiscation or consisted in the confiscation of almost all private agricultural properties in the country and trying to merge them into a state administered agricultural farms. If you want. So basically in the Marxist philosophy, there is no such thing as private property. Everything belongs to the state. It's in commune. It's in commune. That's why communism. So first, to start with, there was a lot of land. The state overnight, so to speak, because it was a process that took over 12 years, this collectivization, but the state ended up with a lot of land. Second of all, back in the days, illiteracy was a widespread reality, let's call it. 40% of the population in Transylvania, they did not know how to read or write, and even more, even higher percentages in other parts. So, but what did they know? The people, they knew how to work the land. So we had a lot of land. We had a lot of people that knew. The only thing that they knew was working the land. Then another thing was the mentality of the communists. They were always interested, Drew, in production. You know, they wanted production. That's what they care about. And they understood that hemp was the answer for them. So they had a lot of land. They had people working the land, and they were interested in good production. So hemp was the answer, in a way. And how we ended up having technology, because that's also interesting. So at the end of the war, we had to pay, I think you would call it war repairs, something like this.
Reparation.
We had to pay a debt of $300 million, which we had to pay in 6 years or over 6 years. And obviously, the country took some risks, and the Soviets came and they said, okay, they're going to help us. They were the good guys, right? So they created the first joint ventures, Romanian-Soviet joint ventures, which were called Sovrom, half Soviet, half Romanian. In reality, Drew, this was just a masked form of robbing the Romanian economy resources by the Soviets. You know, and it was quite obvious. They invented the Sovroms in multiple domains. There was Sovrom wood, and they would get all the wood out. And there was Sovrom steel and Sovrom iron. But it was also Sovrom textiles. So in the 50s, the first technologies of retting, of breaking, of spinning, of weaving, of finishing hemp and linen came through the Soviets. They brought in the technology in our country. Pretty much like the British created the railways in India. They brought in these things with them. Now, they had at that time around the Red Army was around 1 million soldiers. They decided after, I believe that it was after 60, after 57, I think, all the Russian soldiers left the country. But the technology was still there. And by that time, Romanians started to operate it and to improve it. Now, we're talking about a time where hemp was very popular in Eastern Europe. Talking about 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, up until the 90s, almost all the countries. Mm-hmm.
As a textile or for all its purposes?
Mostly in our history in Eastern Europe, hemp was developed for fiber, or was grown for fiber. Pretty much quite the opposite of what's happening today in Western Europe in the North American continent, where most people, they grow for CBD, for seeds, or seeds-related products. Here, we used to grow it, historically speaking, for fiber, to make fabrics. Even today, if you want to look for hemp fabric, they either come from China or from Eastern Europe, most of them. Now, recently, they started to come from India as well, because they adopted the Chinese way of cottonizing the hemp. So these are basically the countries where you can find hemp fabric, basically. And things speeded up, just to speed up a little bit the tape. In 1972, there was a meeting of all the party members of the Romanian Communist Party. And they decided to further prioritize hemp and linen. Hemp and linen, they're cousin plants, if you want. They most of the laws, they put them together. And things escalated quickly, one can say. And in 1989, the year when the communism in Eastern Europe fell, Romania was the largest producer and cultivator of hemp in Europe, and the third largest in the world after the USSR. Soviet Union was massive. There were 11 countries, including Russia and China. But here we are a small country. We're almost, I don't know, back in the day, we're 22 millions. Now we are 20 million and something. But we were like a cluster in here. We had the biggest hemp factory in Europe. We had 46,000 hectares cultivated with hemp and 70,000 hectares with linen. That is a lot when you consider that nowadays Canada, who is number two in the world in terms of cultivating hemp, had 44,000 hectares last year. And Canada is big. The whole European Union 2 years ago had 33,000 hectares. I think the whole US, it's also around 33,000. Maybe this year will go much more, but I don't know with this year, because this is like a year which is on hold so far. But we had that amount of hectares cultivated because everyone was involved in this. Then the 90s came, to continue our story. Then the 90s came, and in the 90s, something funny happened. Basically, all the Western European countries, starting from 1993, starting with the United Kingdom, they were interested in legalizing industrial hemp. So they started to legalize it in 1993. It was first United Kingdom, France, followed in 1994, Germany at the end of 95. So it was, hemp was somehow introduced to the European Union back in the day. Now, the funny thing is that in Eastern Europe, this went a little bit against the current, because we started to regulate it more and more and more. We tried, basically, the government, they tried to stop the regular people cultivating hemp. And everything culminated in, just before we entered the European Union in 2005, 2007 was the last retting facility in Romania. It stopped. It stopped because if you want to do water retting, which is really brilliant if you can do, but just water is very expensive nowadays. The European Union, when Romania entered, they forced us, let's say, to have to filter the water. And most of the people cannot afford a very fancy filtering system, because the water where you leave the hemp plant, it's considered to be dangerous for fishes, or dangerous for nature in general, and you cannot put it back in the nature's circle like that. You need to filter it, and most of the people did not have such things, so they had to, everything collapsed, basically. Right now, we still benefit from this technology. One factory is still focusing on spinning, breaking, spinning the traditional way. Weaving, you can do it in many other places. And basically, this is what we are doing. We try to control the process from crop to shop. Or, as I've heard one American gentleman saying once, from dirt to shirt, basically. And this is what we are doing.
You know, how did you get into sort of making your line of suits and that sort of thing? Are you a fashion designer? Were you in manufacturing? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, you know how they say, necessity is the mother of inventions. Basically, I am not Drew, a fashion designer. I don't have any. I should have started by saying this. Actually, I should have started by saying that I have actually no studies in the hemp industry. I haven't wrote any academic paper. I haven't studied in school or faculty or college or at the university something about textiles or hemp or fashion design. I'm simply passionate. So the only way that I can talk about the subject about hemp is because I'm really passionate about this and nothing else. But I ain't no specialist. It's just years of research in this and nothing else. The beauty of hemp is that it's versatility. And if we can make hemp suits, why not? You know, that's pretty much how, why hemp suits? Because I thought it's something new. It's something new, and I believe that hemp should not be related only to, like, obviously there are many challenges in this domain when you work with hemp. So many, especially hemp textiles. Most of the people think that hemp fabric is just for potheads or for hippies, which is not true. What we want to do is want to prove them wrong by bringing the hemp fabric and the hemp suit in every office around the world, to show them that you don't need to come into a polyester synthetic fiber suit, but you can come up in a natural fiber hemp suit. And, you know, we want to show them this. We don't want to make t-shirts. Everyone else is making t-shirts. They get them from China. They sell them in the US for $30-$35. It's good business. But it's not something that can change the you need to change the industry. You need to explain people the benefits of this beautiful, majestic plant, that you can make anything with it. And you want suits? Yes, here they are, sir. There you go, suits. So you can do anything with this. And we just didn't want to associate too much with this hippie pod hemp movement. We wanted to bring something new, let's say.
So tell me a little bit about the suits. I mean, they are very, very nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Drew. About the suits. Well, we work every product that we do. We do it from scratch. We do not have stocks. We don't have a stock and then you can pick up your size and there you go. No. We believe that each individual is unique. Every person is unique. And therefore their clothes that they're wearing should be unique. And so when we have an order, we prefer to talk with each client, trying to understand a little bit where they're coming from, so to speak, and what type of expectations they have, where would they like to go with the suit, etc., etc. And then we give them the possibility to fully design their outfit. I call it to dream up their hemp suit. We are just here to create it for them, to materialize it into concrete. In other words, we give them the possibility to first choose the style. You want a single-breasted or a double-breasted. Then to choose the vents, double vent, single vent, to choose the lapels, to choose the type of buttons. We normally use coconut, to choose the color. Like on the website, we just have 5 colors, but we can do basically any color. Then to choose the pockets, then to choose if you want to embroider it or not, if you want contrasting stitching or not, because we can go even further if you want to put your name on it. Like we had a client, Drew, that wanted a hemp leaf on his full back. His full back of the jacket, he wanted a massive hemp plant. Hemp plant. And we did it. Because we create everything from scratch in the computer. There is a specific software. We're putting everything together. It normally takes us, officially we say 3 weeks. Normally it takes us 2 weeks, but we just get that, we just say 3 weeks to be covered somehow. And then we ship it. But we're trying to offer something that is different. We're trying to offer something that is different and that it's better than what you find at the market at the correct price.
So how much is a suit? Can you?
Yes, let me think in dollars. You want to know in dollars, right? I think in dollars, a suit in euros, it would be 500 euros. So like $600, $650, okay. Something like that. Not, a three-piece suit.
And so I imagine are hemp suits much more durable than say polyester?
Oh, yes. Now, if you want to go into the benefits of the plant and why a hemp suit is just better than a polyester suit, they're like, again, we can fill in an entire Encyclopedia Britannica just with this. First, yes, to continue your line of thought, Drew, it is. It is definitely more durable. So, and here I would like to make like a sub note. Many people think that hemp is the strongest natural fiber in the world. And I want to say that it is not. And it's probably you heard that, you saw that on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, somewhere that they say this, but it's not true. So to start with, there is spider silk, which is basically what I think Spider-Man is using. It's by far the strongest natural fiber in the world. It's 5 times stronger by weight than any high grade steel known to man. I think it's even stronger than Kevlar, you know. Some people say that hemp is it's the strongest plant-based fiber. Then it's something more correct. That would be something more correct. Although I read a paper where the pineapple fiber proved to be stronger than hemp, and hemp was number two. This is from the Philippines. They have this type of silk, pineapple, I think, silk, and it was considered the queen of Philippine fabric. You can say generally that hemp is the strongest natural based fiber.
So in your suits, is it 100% hemp, or are you incorporating other fibers into it?
In the suit, we use 100% hemp. For lining, we offer also this possibility to clients. They can choose their suit to be unlined, or they can choose it to line it. If you want to create a lining on the inside, we also do hemp. If you want to have hemp on the outside, hemp on the inside. We also recommend sometimes for them to use linen. And why? Is because linen is more soft. Linen is a little bit more comfortable on the skin, because the plant itself, if you've seen it, it grows only 1 meter high, and basically its fiber it's much more thinner than hemp, so you can do a much finer type of cloth with linen. So we recommend them to get linen, and then you can dye it. You can use it red, mustard color, indigo blue, whatever. But we can also do hemp. But what is on the outside of the suit, there is no blend, Drew. It's 100% hemp.
Incredible. And do you use natural dyes?
Good question. No. So far, we haven't done that. We are using dyes that through a Swiss company, and they are certified by the European Union. So it means that they don't cause any trouble to your skin. We want to go further, obviously, and we want to use hemp buttons instead of coconut buttons. We want to use a hemp thread instead of the cotton thread to put everything together. And we want to use, obviously, natural dyes. Then we could easily claim the world's most organic suit, if you want, if we are able to implement all this. But this comes with time. For the time being, we use coconut buttons, we use cotton threads, and ecologically certified dyes. Ecological dyes, they're called here in Europe.
And so how long have you been doing this? How long has your business been around?
We say here that we were established in 2019, because that's when we opened the website, but we are on the market from 2018.
Wow, that's not very long. So where's your market? Is it focused primarily in the EU and Eastern Europe, or is it all over the world?
Pretty much all over the world. We had clients from Australia to Puerto Rico to Denver to France to Germany to the United Kingdom to Canada. A good market, I would say, it's the North American market. And they really, I think it's, they're really interested in hemp. And because there are not a lot of American hemp textile companies, they try to look around. And obviously we are an option out there if you're not looking for cottonized Chinese hemp.
Is anyone doing what you're doing?
In Eastern Europe, yes. In the sense that we are able to process the hemp plant into a clot. Yes. What we are doing is we also take the clot one step further, and we do a soup. As far as I know, hemp suits are not so popular, in the sense there is a big market for them, which it's an advantage and a disadvantage at the same time. But mostly it's an advantage because it's a brand new, fresh market. So if you ask who else is doing what we are doing, taking the plant and making a suit, not as far as I know.
So, you know, in light of what's going on in the world with the coronavirus, you know, I understand you're also making hemp masks. What are the benefits of that in terms of preventing transmission of viruses and other diseases?
Zero. Nada. Absolutely nothing. If you want something to provide to protect you against viruses, one should try a KN95 professional accredited masks. All the other masks that are out there, whether they're in hemp or linen or cotton or any other pineapple fiber, whatever, they have no use. It's simply a fashion thing, and it comforts you mentally, psychologically. And it's good for the people, because otherwise all of them, people that don't need masks, would buy the good masks that are needed right now in the hospitals by the doctors. So if they want masks, okay, get some masks, keep them in your home. It's good that they're reusable. That's a good thing. You don't need to throw them away, which is really good. But in terms of, and of course, one can say, Drew, that a mask is better than no mask. Okay, that I understand that. But in terms of preventing you, protecting you against the coronavirus, there is no such thing tested. Whoever will tell you that they have a hemp mask tested against the coronavirus, I can assure you that it is not true. It can protect you not to touch your nose. Yeah, it can protect you against dust if you want. Hemp fabric, it's antibacterial. So yes, it protects you in this. It offers very good breathability, protects you against the ultraviolet lights naturally. So they offer you natural protection. So they do have, let's say, some benefits, but none of the benefits have anything to do with the coronavirus.
Got you. Yeah, that's important to know. You're right. You know, when it comes to preventing transmission of a virus, you know, it's best to use the professional masks that are Definitely. Built for those.
Exactly. Exactly. I subscribe to that. But nonetheless, we're doing hemp masks at the moment. So we do them. People buy them. It's a very good product right now. It sells. It's super hot. Type of product right now, but we always get in touch with them, and we always offer them this disclaimer.
Right.
We want them, because it's they must understand what they're buying. You don't want to have a hemp mask thinking in the back of your head that you're protected when you're not. You should at least be aware. That's what we're trying to do in the end through our company here in Transylvania. We're trying to raise the awareness. By the way that we process the fiber, or from that very first step moment, the fact that we don't use chemicals, it's just a machine intensive process, all the way to the what are they buying, the end product.
What type of industrial hemp is grown? What's best?
Well, it depends on the cultivars. Like here we have Romanian cultivars. We homologated these cultivars in 1981. We're talking again about time when hemp was illegal around the world. Here we had the research and development teams that studied it, But it's pretty much what's happening right now in the US. We had here back in the 80s. And you can use Lovrin 110, it's really good. Cultivar, Lovrin 111, it's a good cultivar. Dacia Sequieni, it's a good hemp cultivar. We're talking, these are for fiber. Dacia Sequieni is for fiber. So we're talking about this. But if you want to get to grow, hemp CBD, I wouldn't recommend a Romanian hemp cultivar, because that's not our main. I know people here that are doing it. It's just that they prefer to get a cultivar from abroad.
And are these former Soviet varieties, or are they? I know
no,
a lot
this
of.
No, these are Romanian varieties.
Oh, they're all Romanian varieties. Okay.
Yeah. This is 81. This is these are all Romanian varieties. They're still available on the market. You can buy them.
Wow.
It's worth, as the British would say, to give it a go. You can give it a go. You can try.
Where in Romania are you?
I am from a very small village called Bistrița. It's in the mountains. It's the northern part of Transylvania. We call it the Gate of Transylvania because it's quite the first county as you enter. And it was just a couple of miles away from where Bram Stoker wrote Mr. Stoker wrote Dracula. There is a statue over here dedicated to Mr. Stoker, and a castle where he lived, where he wrote the Dracula novel. You know, we have many stories here with vampires, as one can imagine.
So, do people get tired of hearing sort of the mysticism of Transylvania and vampires and all that sort of thing?
Oh, no, never. Every year we have more people coming. Every year. It's a very fascinating story, you know. It's a very... The tourists, they love haunted castles. And here in Transylvania, we have many forests and, haunted forests, castles, werewolves. They're like groups of people that love these things. They do love it. And Americans, sometimes they come for Halloween. Excuse me, Halloween is not a Romanian party, right? But they do love to spend a good Halloween night in the haunted castle of Count Dracula. They love that, you know, and it's good. It's good. It's a very beautiful, magnificent region, I would say.
But before you go, if anyone wants to, what is the name of the company?
The name of our company, it's De Ionescu. De Ionescu. And it means, in a nutshell, or motamo, it means the son of going. The son of going, Ion, comes from ancient Greek, from the verb Ionai, which means to go. And Ion, it's the present participle, it's going. Escu, it's a typical Romanian suffix, and it means the son of. So the son of going, one can translate. And as our logo, we opted for the cuckoo bird. You know, the cuckoo bird, because the cuckoo is by definition a wandering entity. It never creates a nest for itself. It's always on the run, you know? So, but at the same time, the cuckoo, it's the symbol, in my country at least, of the eternal return. And what we, because it always goes into the hot countries and always returns back. And what we try to achieve here is to bring back Romanian hemp, to revive it in a way. So that's why we opted for the cuckoo bird as our emblem, as our logo.
Oh, that's great. And
yeah, and if they want to find us, they can find us on www.theionescu.com, which is D for Delta, E for Echo, I for India, O for Oscar, N for November, E for Echo, S for Sierra, C for Charlie, U for uniform.com.
Well, molto mesk, is that how you say Whoa. Thank you, right? From what I remember.
Bingo, Drew. Very nice. It's a great touch. Great, okay. Great touch. Yes, it's correct. Correct. We say mulțumesc. Very
mulțumesc,
nice.
Yeah.
Foarte bine, foarte bine. Which means very good, very good. Very nice.
We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Jonas Roos. So please, go online and order your own hemp suit. And remember to subscribe to the Hemp Entrepreneur Podcast to hear more compelling stories about the people pioneering hemp businesses in the U.S.